Mario Lanza, almost alive and in person. I found this 20-year-old entry in my red clay diary. Though it happened long ago, it feels like yesterday. And it helps me recall my mom and a good adventure I had with my brother, Tim. Somewhere deep in the bowels of the city of Philadelphia, on the second floor, or is it the third, of a music school, reside the paper and cloth remnants of a pre-Pavarotti superstar, a man who died in 1959, still remembered by a few aging fans who celebrate his Philadelphia-ness each year. I am here with my brother Tim, who is busy showing his whimsical art at an enormous Civic Center show. I take a break to have an adventure in a town I know little about. The Mario Lanza Institute and Museum, I learn, is listed as a tourist attraction by AAA, and of course, this is the natural place I want to visit first if I ever get to Philadelphia. This kind of attraction appeals to me most. The dusty little out-of-the-way corners of the nation that are ignored by crowds waiting to get into the Benjamin Franklin Institute or who drive 90 miles to see the home of Edgar Allan Poe. Besides, my mother is a long-time fan of Lanza, so I think it will be a great gesture to bring her a souvenir or two from the Institute. The Angolan cab driver has no idea how to get me to the Mario Lanza Institute and Museum, so we have to stop several places at my expense to ask various uninformed and usually indifferent citizens for directions. We finally find a woman standing in front of a theater whose child has actually attended the music school and who thus provides directions for me. Certainly not directions for the cab driver, who has no idea where anything is and whose wife is trying to get through nursing school so he won't have to spend the rest of his life driving through a city he fears. Quote, "No cab driver wants to drive after 5 o'clock in this town," close quote. So, after scrunching up our shoulders to make it through the narrow streets, I at last tell the lost driver to just let me out. He does, and I find myself in an alien land, shabby, overcrowded, and over-squeezed buildings, trash in the streets, and loiterers eyeing passers-by with thirsty curiosity. Just can't figure out where I am. So I enter a teeming neighborhood laundry to ask the Chinese owner for directions. He can't understand anything I say, and the hangers-out in the establishment are beginning to crowd uncomfortably close to me. The bearded London fog, overcoated bald guy, who just doesn't seem to come from these parts. One rather large, sullen man looms over me, staring. From behind, someone taps me roughly on the shoulder. I freeze, hoping the contact is accidental. The tapping continues, and I turn to find the smiling face of a woman who speaks English and actually knows where the Mario Lanza Institute is. Just a block away, behind high metal fences, stands an aged building with high ceilings and run-down plaster-walled offices. Inside, even though I call ahead to make sure the museum is open, nobody can tell me how to get upstairs to see the museum. Quote, "The elevator can be operated only by key, and you'll have to talk to the people in the office." The people in the office are tied up with personal phone calls, so I stick my head into a side office, interrupting the casual chatter of two denizens who send me back to the desk I've just come from. "Here, I'll let you on the elevator with my key." A grizzled, limping elderly man smiles. He leads me down a narrow hallway to a stale-smelling tiny elevator and sends me on my way, alone and claustrophobic, to the floor where I might find Mario Lanza's scraps and pieces, if I'm lucky. Once the door clangs open, I am inside another narrow corridor which leads eventually to a high-ceilinged, dimly-lit hallway on the walls of which Mario Lanza himself, PR, grins himself silly for visitors and photographers around the world. There are yellowed newspaper clippings, a framed letter to Mario from Jack Warner, another from Sammy Kahn, a Mario Lanza dinner jacket with the faint yellowing you associate with rental outfits. His arms were incredibly short, it seems. Various audio cassette tapes comparing Lanza to Caruso, tabloid papers reporting on the annual Mario Lanza Festival, dingy scrapbooks and press clipping binders available for Lanza file research, a sample copy of a book about Lanza. Quote, "We're out of these, so we can't sell this copy," the board clerk who staffs the Institute says, and various fan club materials on the cracked plaster walls of one small room. And that is it. The Mario Lanza Institute and Museum is about to close in the middle of the afternoon, and I am the third and final person to sign the guest book this day. I purchase a cassette for my mother, pick up a few freebie photocopies and pamphlets for her, and make my way downstairs to the main door, dodging young musicians and their parents. Outside in the cold winter air, I cannot find a cab, but two tourists do stop to ask me for instructions. I wander toward what is called the Italian market, smelling wonderful cooked sausage and pasta fragrances, and try to look as if I know what I am doing in this strange and unclean neighborhood, trying to look as if I can handle myself. Finally, a cab driver, idling his GM car in front of a small store, says he will take me back to the Philadelphia Civic Center as soon as his mate is through shopping. His wife, a petite and polite woman, chats with me a bit as we drive through the incredibly narrow streets of another planet and head towards some place I can call familiar in this best and worst of all possible cities, where once a tenor spent some time making fans of people who are beginning now to forget both him and the hopefulness that once welled from within his lungs, a hopefulness that thrilled my mom and a million other moms whose lives in the late 1940s and early 1950s were so much harder, but so much purer then.